Well, it's certainly a momentous time in our country. Lots of changes, especially in our government. Probably many of you listened to the inaugural address and all the other things that went on. And so this morning our lesson is going to focus on the advice that God gives to kings and rulers. I would like for our new president to have been in our audience today, but he's not, and that's okay. But the advice comes from God about what kind of kings and rulers, leaders, God desires. Back on March 4th, 1841, America's newest president, the ninth one, was William Henry Harrison. He's known for a lot of things. One is he gave the longest inaugural address of any president, an hour and 45 minutes in a blinding snowstorm, right there on the steps of there in Washington on the Capitol. In that inaugural address, I read quite a bit of it yesterday, not the whole hour and 45 minutes of it, but it was quite a masterpiece. I understand Daniel Webster was helped him in that writing, but it is truly a masterpiece. At the very end of that, or almost the very end of it, he says this, in talking about him being inaugurated as the new president. "I deem the present occasion sufficiently important and solemn to justify me in expressing to my fellow citizens a profound reverence for the Christian religion, and a thorough conviction that sound morals, religious liberty, and a just sense of religious responsibility are essentially connected with all true and lasting happiness." I say amen to that. Quite a way to end an inaugural address. Many inaugural addresses, matter of fact, most that I saw anyway, had some reference to a divine being in it. His in particular, of course, focused on the Christian religion, and he mentioned God and a number of other things throughout that inaugural address, but that part in particular talked about how the Christian religion was essential to the running and the future of the United States. You know, the Bible is very specific that it was God Himself that instituted civil government. He is behind it. In Romans chapter 13, kind of as an introduction today, in Romans chapter 13, Paul wrote to the church there at Rome, and of course, at that time, the Roman government was the world leaders. Romans 13, verse 1, Paul, or God speaking through Paul, says this, verse 1, "Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God." The whole concept of civil government and authorities comes from God. You know, Jesus told Pilate the same thing, didn't he? In his defense, his authority came from God. You wouldn't have any authority if it didn't come from Him. Notice what else it says. "Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves." Again, civil authority comes from God. "For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you'll have praise from the same, for He is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid. For He does not bear the sword in vain, for He's God's minister and avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil." During the days of Daniel, Daniel chapter 4, verse 32, he reminds, God does, through Daniel, reminds King Nebuchadnezzar, the leader of the world at that time, that God rules in the affairs of men. God's behind it. And God expects leaders, whether they be kings or presidents or whomever, to follow certain principles. He expects that, regardless of who the leader is, regardless of where they are, whatever, he expects rulers, kings, authorities to follow certain principles. And these are the principles that he desires and demands of rulers. Do most follow these? Probably not. Do the good ones? Absolutely. We've been studying from the book of Proverbs on Sunday night. This lesson primarily comes from the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs mentions many, many qualities that a God-approved leader must have. Number one, he must care for those under his authority. In Proverbs chapter 20, verse 28, Solomon writes this, "Mercy and truth preserve the king, and by loving kindness he upholds his throne." What's the foundation of his throne? Mercy, kindness, truth. That preserves his reign. Not military might, not economic strength, but what preserves it? He says mercy, truth, kindness. That's what upholds the throne. Without those, the throne is not upheld. So what does God desire of leaders? Mercy, truth, loving kindness. If you want God's favor upon your leadership, then that's what they must possess. Those qualities. He must be, or she must be, kind toward those who do right. I love this in Proverbs 17, verse 26. Proverbs 17, verse 26. Notice the first part. "Also, to punish the righteous is not good, nor to strike princes for their uprightness." We talk about people being a prince of a man. Leaders are to help the righteous, be kind toward the righteous, protect the righteous from evil. That's a God-approved leader. That's what he does. He helps the poor and needy. Proverbs chapter 31, verse 9. Leaders are to be concerned about those who cannot help themselves. Proverbs 31, verse 9. This is a chapter talking about the words of King Lemuel. Verse 9, "Open your mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and needy." God expects leaders to help those who can't help themselves, like the poor, like the needy, to be concerned about them. And God has always wanted, again, whether it was a judge, whether it was a king, or whoever, to be very, very concerned about the poor, the needy, the orphans, the widows, to be concerned about those people. And kindness is something that's very refreshing in a leader. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 12. Proverbs 19, verse 12. Solomon says, "The king's wrath is like the roaring of a lion, but his favor is like dew on the grass." His favor, his kindness, his mercy is like dew on the grass. What does dew on the grass do? It's refreshing. It gives life. So leaders, from God's perspective, are to be people who are merciful and kind, especially they are concerned with the poor, the needy, again, those who are less fortunate. Leaders are all supposed to be wise in their leading. They're supposed to make wise, sound decisions. In Proverbs 16, verse 10, Solomon says, "Divination is on the lips of the king. His mouth must not transgress in judgment." The word there, divination, has to do with discernment. Being able to tell right from wrong. You know, our leaders are supposed to be able to tell the difference between right and wrong. That's a God-approved leader, able to do that. Able to see a matter and separate whether it's good or evil, or be able to tell what parts of it are good or what parts of it are evil. What's right and what's wrong. And their mouth is not supposed to transgress in judgment. They are to make sound decisions. That's what God expects of them. You know, Apostle Paul said we're to pray for all kings, all rulers. These are some of the things we need to be praying that our new leaders will have. That they'll make sound decisions. They'll protect the right. They'll encourage the righteous. They'll not oppress, but rather take care of those who are oppressed. Make good, sound decisions. In Proverbs 23, still talking about decisions. Proverbs 23, verse 2. It's the glory of God to conceal a matter, but the glory of kings is to search out a matter. To investigate. Good rulers don't make decisions without investigating. They make sound decisions, and the only way you can make sound decisions is to investigate a matter. Not based on hearsay or what most people might want, but what is good? What's right? See, you investigate, leaders do. You gather the evidence. You find out so you can make good judgments. And if the ruler wants his nation to be prolonged, Proverbs 28, verse 2, tells us this. 28, verse 2. Because of the transgression of a land, many are its princes, but by a man of understanding and knowledge, right will be prolonged. That we need to pray our leaders will be men and women, people of understanding and knowledge. That's what we want. And that's what we need to pray for. And remember that prayer is very effective. In chapter 20, verse 8, Solomon says this, "A king who sits on the throne of judgment scatters all evil with his eyes." Scatters all evil. He separates it out. Keeps the good, gets rid of the bad. Gets rid of the evil. He must do that. To find God's favor anyway. Drives it away. And he's one that's very concerned about justice. In chapter 29 of Proverbs, a couple of different verses point that out. Chapter 29, verse 4. The king establishes the land by justice, but he who receives bribes overthrows it. A good leader, one that God finds favor with, is one who's just. He practices justice, and the land is established by justice. No favoritism. That's the second part, right? Doesn't receive bribes. So he's just, and he practices justice. That's what makes this leader, this ruler, a good ruler. He is just, he practices just, he doesn't practice favoritism. He knows what's good. This, of course, you know, even in the New Testament, Matthew chapter 3, verse 12. Of course, this is talking about what God is going to do. But this is the idea of separating right from wrong, good from bad, sin from righteousness. Verse 12 says, "His winnowing fan is at his hand, and he will thoroughly clean out his threshing floor, and gather his wheat into the barn, but he will burn up the chaff with unquenchable fire. See, a good leader sifts. He sifts through things, so he knows what is good and acceptable and that he needs to keep, but gets rid of what's wrong and what's evil. That is the kind of leader that finds God's favor. So he is just, and he knows how to make good, wise decisions. The third thing, a leader does what is right. He does what's right. There in Proverbs chapter 29, verse 2. When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when a wicked man rules, the people groan. Now notice what it says. The people rejoice when the righteous are in authority. Don't you even if we're talking about the place you work, you want the person that's in charge, that's the leader, that's the authority, to do what? To be righteous. To do right things. And of course, that's very true of the leader of the whole nation. We want that leader to do right things, to practice righteousness. When he does, we will rejoice. The righteous will. And we'll be glad because it brings blessings. Leaders should foster the righteous, should help the righteous. Not make it more difficult for the righteous, but to foster the righteous. Practicing justice, practicing equality, freedom, just to name a few. There, one chapter back, in chapter 28, verse 12, says something very similar to 29, verse 2, but includes something. Verse 12 says, "When the righteous rejoice, there is great glory. But when the wicked arise, men hide themselves." They hide themselves. Also in verse 28 of that same chapter, "But when the wicked arise, men hide themselves, but when they perish, the righteous increase." We need to pray that our leaders, our rulers, will practice righteousness. They'll be just. They'll practice equality. Keep our freedoms and safeguard them. Especially the freedom to worship. The freedom to worship as we desire. When was the last time you prayed that our leaders would continue to safeguard our freedom to worship? Now that's something to think about. That's something that needs to be in our prayer life. I forget it a lot. You start taking things for granted. Well, we'll always have that freedom. That's not necessarily true. So since we're to pray for all kings, all rulers, all leaders, that's one thing we need to pray for, is that they will safeguard our freedom to worship, our freedom to practice our religion. Another extremely important thing that's brought out in Proverbs, still under the heading of doing what's right, is in Proverbs 16, verse 8. "Better is a little with righteousness than vast revenues without justice." Better is a little with righteousness than vast revenues without justice. Morality is more important than wealth. Morality is more important than wealth. I wish everybody in our country understood that, don't you? And that's what we want in leaders. Moral people. Whether they make my life easier physically or not is not important. What is important is our spiritual side. that we're allowed to live in a land that gives us these freedoms to worship and to live moral lives. Whether I'm poor or not, it's not important. So we shouldn't pick leaders based on how they're going to make my life so much easier. I think that's typically what happens, but that's not from the Bible. The Bible says it's better to have just a little bit with righteousness than have vast wealth without it. In that same chapter, down in verse 12, it says, it's an abomination for kings to commit wickedness. For a throne is established by righteousness. It's an abomination. Why? Well, they're the leaders. They're the ones before people. It's an abomination for them to commit wickedness. Wickedness of any kind. So morality is so important for us. And we need to pray that our leaders will be moral people. You know, so often those in authority want to legalize immoral things. Usually to make money, but maybe for other reasons. It's still wrong. You know, character is essential. I mean, isn't that what verse 12 was really talking about? A throne is established by righteousness, by character, by people who have integrity. That's the kind of leaders we need to pray for, that there'll be people of integrity, people of good character, of high morals. That's the most important thing. That's what's really, truly important. And I think that's what William Henry Harrison was saying there at the close of an inaugural address. That's what's really important, is for men to be like that. Righteous leaders honor those who do right. The very next verse, there, 16, verse 13, chapter 16, verse 13. Righteous lips are the delight of kings, and they love him who speaks what is right. Leaders should honor those who do right and practice righteousness, and should be watching over them. Chapter 18, verse 5. It's not good to show partiality to the wicked or to overthrow the righteous in judgment. Leaders need to be very aware of that. And of course, one way that's done is the legal system. But it needs to honor those who do right. That's what it needs to do. And not show partiality to the wicked. God says we should never do that. A good leader is careful about the people around him. Chapter 25, beginning in verse 4. Chapter 25, beginning in verse 4. Take away the dross from silver, and it will go to the silversmith for jewelry. Take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne will be established in righteousness. What does a leader need to do? Get rid of anybody around him that's wicked. So a leader has to choose his close advisors carefully, in today's language. Be very careful about who they choose. Get rid of wickedness. In chapter 25, verse 15, by long forbearance, a ruler is persuaded, and a gentle tongue breaks a bone. Diplomacy, I guess, is a way of saying that. In chapter 29, verse 12, some more excellent advice for leaders. If a ruler pays attention to lies, all his servants become wicked. If he pays attention to lies. That goes back to a leader has to be wise. He has to be able to make good decisions, to sift what's good from what's bad, to investigate a matter. That has to be an ability he has to lead people. And he must be able to do that, to sift through those things and not pay attention to lies, but pay attention to the truth. regardless of what that truth is. And lastly, he must discipline the wicked. Proverbs 14, verse 35, says, "The king's favor is toward a wise servant, but his wrath is against him who causes shame." Against him who causes shame. He must discipline the ones who cause shame, who dishonor themselves. Chapter 16, verse 14. He writes, "As messengers of death is the king's wrath, but a wise man will appease it. In the light of the king's face is life, and his favor is like a cloud of the latter rain." A king's wrath can be destructive. We read in Romans already, chapter 13, how a government, one of their purposes of the government is to discipline the wicked. And notice that comes with God's approval. Not disciplining the righteous, but disciplining the wicked. God instituted that government, and it says in those verses that He's behind that government disciplining the sinful, the wicked, the evil, those who are bad. So it is part of a leader's responsibility to discipline the wicked. Something else in our prayers. Think about just some of the verses we read this morning that will help us in our prayers in praying for a new president and what kind of qualities he needs to exhibit or to grow into. Being upright and moral, a person of integrity, a person of character, a person who doesn't favor the wicked, who promotes the righteous, who doesn't have wicked people around him. He makes good decisions, sound decisions. He's able to sift through what's good and bad. He practices righteousness and justice and equality. He's concerned about those who can't help themselves, the poor, the needy, the oppressed, the widows, the orphans. He's concerned about those. He knows character is important. He honors those who do right, and he disciplines the wicked. Those are things we can pray for that our government, our leaders will do. And when Paul tells Timothy about praying for all kings and all rulers, those are some specific things we can pray for. Because in conclusion, notice what chapter 14, verse 34 says. Chapter 14, verse 34. "Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people." What exalts a nation? Right living. Doing what's right. Righteousness. That's what exalts a nation. But sin is a reproach. And sin is what will bring a nation down. So yes, you and I have responsibility to pray for our leaders that they will be these type of men. Men of integrity. Men of high moral standards. People of integrity that are good characters and that do what's right. As Danny leads us in this invitation song, let's think about our responsibility as Christians. Number two, let's think about, do I need to respond and become a Christian by being baptized for the forgiveness of your sins? And if you do, I encourage you to come as Danny leads us in this song.